taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. We teach ourselves to be free. You know, I've told this story before, but I am a product of public schools, mostly in the 1970s. And you know, at that time, school was different. By the time my wife and I had our daughter, we had already decided that public school was not the answer. I'd seen enough exposure to what had gone on in public schools, met with enough people who had issues with people in public schools, we decided, you know what, we're going to teach our daughter ourselves. And to this day, it's I think, one of the best decisions we made in raising our daughter. Our daughter is now an adult. Everyone recognizes she is well-adjusted. She is smart as a whip. She has her dad's sense of humor. She has her mother's sensibilities. And what she doesn't have is, let's just say, a lot of the crazy indoctrination that comes from government school. I have a hard time now calling them public school because they're not so much run by the public as run by government. See, public schools were put together where parents would get together and they would hire a teacher. They would form a school. They'd run the school board. Yet more and more school boards are being run by professionals, not parents. They're getting their marching orders from state and federal governments, not the parents. It's less and less a matter of publicly run schools and more government run schools. Now, when it comes to professionals, there are a lot of places where I look and say, you know what, that needs a professional. You know, I'm going to a doctor. I want a professional. If I need a engineering done, I go to a professional. You know, someone who needs to fix the air conditioning, I call a professional because I don't know what I'm doing. But more and more, when we see what happens with the professional class in some of our schools, it should really disturb most Americans. Now, I've got several stories along this line, but I want to start with this one out of Scottsdale, Arizona. And it, to me, it's a cautionary tale, not simply for the question of school boards, but for you to take some time and think about your own internet security. So I spent 30 years in IT. I spent 25 working in data centers. I'm familiar with the concepts, and this to me is both an example of lax internet security leading to the exposure of a school board member who, well, let's say I don't think most parents would be real thrilled with. See, there was a mother in the Scottsdale Unified School District, the SUSD, and she uncovered a link to a Google Drive. Now, apparently, a school board, the school board president, Jan Michael Greenberg, sent an image to her in a screenshot in an email, and it had a link to a Google Drive. And that Google Drive was set up so that anyone with the link had access to it. Right? To me, that's one of the reasons why I tend to avoid, or I tend to use cloud storage services like Google Drive and Dropbox and whatnot with concern. I don't put information out there that, let's say, I don't want the entire world to know. Not simply because somebody may share a link that that wasn't secured properly, but simply from the standpoint that Google will tend to share that information whenever they're asked to. So there's my internet security point. However, this Google Drive, which has been nicknamed the online dossier by parents, well, included some interesting stuff. It had folders with names like SUSD Wackos, Press Conference Psychos, Anti-Mask Lunatics, and others. Now, under the press conference psychos was a video of parents holding up a CRT as racist sign. And SUSD, we demand transparency. Now, this dossier, it also included, by the way, pictures of some of the students. Let's just say it was quite a mess. Now, in this dossier, they found, let's say, specific targeting of a parent group called the Community Advocacy Network, or CAN. Administrators and founders of CANs, they found their Facebook pages. They found folders dedicated to screenshots of their Facebook comments, pictures of them with their husbands, in some cases, even financial records. One of the leaders of CAN was that they had in their folder a credit deed of trust from a credit union, a copy of her mortgage, even information on her Airbnb property and pictures of her children. Other posts include detailed information of members and moderators of the CAN's Facebook group, including personal documents with portions of the parent's Social Security number or information parents showing pro-Trump signs or Thomas Sowell quotes. They even had one parent's divorce proceedings. It also appears to contain opposition research against Amy Carney, who has announced that she plans to run for the school board in 2022. Now, why do I bring this up? Well, there's two reasons. Again, as I've already mentioned, it just goes to show that internet security is something I have to pay attention to. But it also shows that there are those, I'm not trying to paint with too broad a brush, there are those in all walks of life, including in school districts, that will use their position for political advantage. What is described in this quote-unquote online dossier is combination opposition research and the collection of data that could potentially be used for blackmail. Now, do I believe that this school board president is an outlier? Yes, I honestly believe in my heart that the vast majority of school board members and school board presidents would not stoop to collecting dirt on those who they disagree with. But it also goes to show that there is a growing contingent in this country that I believe will use any means necessary, legal and illegal, to get to their aims. They view people who disagree with them as the enemy, as wackos or psychos or lunatics, and they will collect information and use it against you. You know, I was talking to a gentleman at one of my events last week, and he mentioned he was running for office. I made the point, says, they're going to come after you. They're going to come after your family. You will be lied about, slandered, defamed in the media. It's going to happen. He goes, I know. And he's willing to do that. He's willing to put, he's already made the decision that he will do that to do what he thinks is right, to properly represent the people of his district. But what does it say about our schools when they seem more like, the school boards seem more like political campaigns than trying to find people who will oversee and administer the education of our children? And if you think that standing up against masking your children makes you a lunatic, what does that say about the people that the citizens of Scottsdale, Arizona, have hired to be on their school board? So I wonder how many people in Scottsdale, Arizona, were shocked by when they found out about the actions of Jan Michael Greenberg. And I wonder how many of those same people that were shocked either had voted for Mr. Greenberg or didn't think it was worth voting at all. I mean, let's face it, school boards don't exactly drive voting. You don't get a lot of participation in school board elections. But maybe we should. Maybe we should not blindly leave the education of our children to politicians and bureaucrats and potentially people like Mr. Greenberg here. Now, while we're at it, there's a report, I saw this in Hot Air, but there's a report that a New York columnist is providing some advice. Now, apparently, Michelle Goldberg gave this advice in the New York Times. And there's a lot in here, and I don't want to get into it in details, but it does deal with the current dust-up with schools, and not just in Virginia, although Virginia has seemed to be a focal point. But Michelle Goldberg talks about the current environment around education, the reason why it was such an issue in the Virginia governor's race, and the reaction of all these parents. And at one point she says, in an environment like this, Republican proposals to subsidize private school tuition are likely to be received gratefully by many parents. It's a perilous situation for Democrats, the party of public schools. If they want to stand to staunch the bleeding, they should treat the rollout of the children's COVID vaccine as an opportunity to make public schools feel lively and joyful again. Now do you know why I don't trust anything that comes out of New York Times? Now do you know why I don't trust anything that comes out of most of the mainstream media, any of the mainstream media, any media period? Because here we have a New York Times report saying, listen, Democrats, get your act together or the Republicans are going to use this opportunity to push forward their agenda. Funny, but did you think that your school-aged children were an agenda? Apparently they are to not only the political class, but the media class as well. And apparently Ms. Goldberg is more than happy to push having your children used as medical experiments, well, just in order to help the Democrats win, or maybe to prevent the Republicans from getting their way. How many of you get information from the New York Times? How many people have looked at this and said, gee, what else maybe do I not want to what else have I listened to, and maybe I want to go back and double check? Because now we're finding out that you remember when the National Association of School Boards sent that letter to the Biden administration, and Attorney General Merrick Garland, well, he ordered the FBI to go right after those crazy lunatic domestic terrorist parents. And then it kind of blew up in their face and they said, well, maybe we're backing off. Well, come to find out, maybe not. See, a DOJ whistleblower claims that the FBI ordered personnel to compile parental threat assessments. These, according to documents that have been obtained by the House Judiciary officials. You see, the FBI created a threat tag labeled EduOfficials to track instances of threats against school officials. Now, I hate to tell you this, but that's not a federal issue. So in October, when Attorney General Garland said he could not imagine any circumstance in which the Patriot Act would be used in the circumstances of parents complaining about their children, nor a circumstance where they would be labeled as domestic terrorists, only to find out that, they're being tagged. Now, granted, a tag is a statistical tool, but since threats against school board members are not a power delegated to the federal government, that's a state issue. This is not a federal issue. And even though, you know, now that Garland says, well, they're backing off, well, apparently, maybe not so much. You see, it's one of those things where, you know, once you sick the dog of government, of the federal government on somebody, they don't let go that easy. So now we have the FBI tracking what they consider to be threats to school board members. And again, if anybody makes a threat against a true threat against a school board, that is a crime in all 50 states. The local law enforcement should be dealing with that. It's not a federal issue, but it's been turned into one. And it's been turned into one. We have evidence now, not simply with the National Association of School Boards, but with the willing participation and assistance of the White House. See, this is once again, we have the FBI and the Department of Justice being turned into the political hitmen. The political hatchet men of another administration. And although I try not to get political here, I'm trying to remember the last time a Republican administration use the FBI to go after their political opponents, those who disagree with them politically. But this is, what, the third or fourth time I've seen a Democratic administration do that. And not just with the FBI, but with the other branches of government. See, this is what happens when we vest so much power in the federal government. When the very idea of dealing with local issues is now considered under the purview of the FBI and the federal DOJ, our very liberties are at stake. Now, there's a lot of argument that, oh, you know, these are just tags. This is just so we can look at this information. You know, this is not a changing in our standings or how we're going to prioritize. But I'm sorry, it doesn't smell that way. You see, Merrick Garland issued a memo to the FBI to begin these investigations based on what he referred to as a spike in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against school administrators, boards, board members, teachers, and staff, yet with absolutely zero evidence of it. The Department of Justice and the FBI have now initiated investigations into a spike that does not exist. They have no evidence of. And when Merrick Garland told the House that, no, we're not doing that, and then you find, well, yes, sort of we are. Do you feel safe? Do you feel comfy now? And remember, somewhere around half of your fellow Americans voted to have your states put this administration in place. Do you still feel comfortable now? And again, these are not simply the words of a whistleblower. This apparently includes actual evidence. See, apparently Representative Jim Jordan has sent a letter to the FBI in which he said, quote, last month during your test, I'm sorry, specifically Merrick Garland, not the FBI, to Merrick Garland. And he said, quote, last month during your testimony before the Judiciary Committee, you testified that the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigations were not using federal counterterrorism tools to target concerned parents at local school board meetings. We are now in receipt of a protected disclosure from the department whistleblower showing that the FBI's counterterrorism division is compiling and categorizing threat assessments related to parents, including a document directing FBI personnel to use a specific threat tag to track potential investigations. This calls into question the accuracy and completeness of your sworn testimony. Now, again, once the evidence came out that the National School Board Association letter was drafted in conjunction with the Biden administration, is anyone really surprised that they're still following what's going on? They're still following this. They're still investigating. They're trying to come up. You know, this is a crime in search of a victim. This is not a question of we have a national. I mean, let's face it. Again, a threat against a school board, a threat against anyone is not a federal issue, not unless it's a threat against a federal official. So we have the federal government interfering with state and local government and their rightful authority in violation of the 10th Amendment. We find out about it. They said, oh, no, we're going to back off, but they're still doing it. And when I talk about the earlier thing from Scottsdale, Arizona, where you have school boards collecting personal information about parents that are complaining, makes you wonder, doesn't it? Now, to date, I don't know of any time when the FBI has actually charged anyone, has opened an investigation, but we've already had such questionable actions. Do you trust them? And if you don't trust your employees, what do you do about it? So again, Merrick Garland is an employee. He works for the people. He's a public servant. He works for the president, but the president is a public servant. And I wonder, when will the people stop saying, you know what? Playing fast and loose with these are not good enough. If you are opening investigations, into areas that are not your purview, then you're committing a crime. You are depriving both the states and their citizens of the power to exercise, the ability to exercise powers held exclusively by them, that the 10th Amendment prohibits the federal government from being involved in. When are we going to stop treating the federal government as if it's our king, as if we are vassals and subjects and slaves to whatever those in Washington, D.C. want to do? Because if we don't, they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop because the media points it out. They're not going to stop until we, the people, start standing up and demanding they follow the rules we established for them. Until we start treating them like employees rather than masters. And while we're at it, let's kick back to the schools. See, one of the most disturbing things I've noticed in public schools, government schools over the years, is the arrogance of believing that they know better than the parents. That the professionals should not be questioned, but the professionals should overrule the will of the parents because they know better. They're professionals after all. I call it hubris and arrogance, but they call it professional conduct. And this is not really surprising. I've only done a little bit of research into this, but understand one of the reasons we have a government-run school was specifically to separate children from their parents, to prevent them from being indoctrinated with the ideas that their parents held. As I understand it, initially it was primarily they wanted to separate students from the Catholic teachings of their parents. That's now gone to the point of we want to separate them from any of the teachings of their parents that don't fit the current progressive mantra, the Marxist, Leninist, socialist, totalitarian, collectivist mantra. And then I saw this story out of Wisconsin. This is actually coming from the Daily, I'm going to quote from the Daily Caller. A 12-year-old girl was pulled from public school after the district began a, quote, social transition, which the complaint says involves presenting to others as the opposite sex, primarily by adopting a new name and pronouns, against the parents' expressed wishes, according to a lawsuit against the Kettle Moraine School District filed on November 17th by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and the Alliance Defending Freedom on behalf of two sets of parents. So here you have a 12-year-old girl, and apparently there's another child in there as well. Now, whether the child wanted this or the child was influenced to want this, because let's face it, there's a lot of pressure in public schools. When we homeschooled our daughter, the question every homeschooler gets asked is, aren't you worried about socialization? To which my response was, yes, I'm very worried about socialization. That's why she's not going to public school. It's the Lord of the Flies. Whatever the latest internet meme or hero is going on, students are pressured by their peers to imitate. So I'm not sure if this child actually wanted transition or if it was just peer pressure from seeing all the wonderful news about gender fluidity or whatever they're claiming. Now the parents specifically expressed that this not happen, at least according to the lawsuit. But the complaint goes on, quote, the Kettle Moraine School District has a policy, whether written or unwritten, allowing minor students to socially transition to a different gender identity at school without parental consent and even over the parent's objection. See, that's the complaint in the lawsuit. Now think about this. Imagine, now when I was a kid, I couldn't get an aspirin without my parents' permission. I couldn't go on a field trip. I couldn't participate in sports without my parents' express written permission. But here we have either a written or unwritten policy at this school district. Not only says the child can go through this social experiment, go through this what psychological indoctrination, this psychological progress, not only without the parents' consent, but over the parents' objection. I wrote an article a few weeks ago, you can find it on the website, Constitution Study, where I talk about this idea of in loco parentis. The idea of when your child is, when you are not around and your child is effectively in the custody of others, there are certain parental rights that they assume, right? So in a school, when your child's at school, the school has a responsibility to protect the child. If the child is injured, the school has a responsibility to seek medical attention. It doesn't supersede all of parents' rights, but they assume certain parental. And by the way, the same thing happens when you take your friend, your child, over to another friend's house for a play date, right? That parent assumes certain in loco parentis rights dealing with the physical safety of the child, not with the authority to overrule the parent's desire as far as how the child is going to be trained. But you see, this school district doesn't believe that. Now, this one was found out. How many are not? How many things are your children being allowed to do, exposed to, encouraged, that you guys never know about because the school doesn't tell you? I remember many years ago, I was talking to a young mother in our church, and she was very upset. And come to find out, her small child, I think she's only in third or fourth grade at the time, in public school, had been exposed to sexually explicit material. When the mother went to the principal to find out why she was not given the opportunity to opt her daughter out, the principal said, well, we found that if we allow parents to opt out, they tend to do it. So they just don't bother. It's this idea that your child is not yours. It belongs to society. It belongs to the school district. It belongs to the nation. And if you don't agree, well, they'll just do what they want behind your back. What I'd like to see, and again, I don't know all the details, but this lawsuit proceed, but are criminal charges going to be filed? You see, the school, under whatever rule or regulation they decided, violated the rights of the parents. They deprived them of the right to oversee the raising of their child. I just wrote an article about this. You can, again, find it on the website, constitutionstudy.com. You'll also find it on AmericaOutloud.com, that talked about a 1970s case that said, no, the parents have the right to raise their children as they see fit. Government can only interfere when there is clear signs that the safety of the child is in danger. So go check that out. I think it's actually the November 22nd article on constitutionstudy.com. You can find more there. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, please head over to healthycell.com/outloud. You know, I don't know. I've been taking vitamins for years. My wife wants me to take them. You know, let's face it, I'm a guy. I probably wouldn't bother except my wife wants me to, because for some reason she wants me to hang around for a while. And we've been trying this new Healthy Cell product because, one, it's a gel. It's not pills, so they're easier to take. You can even mix it in with food or water. But they've redesigned how these vitamins are made and how they're absorbed into the body. And they've got different formulas to do different things. So if you are worried about your immune system, like a lot of people are nowadays with COVID, not to mention the flu and other things, well, try Healthy Cells Immune Super Boost. It is designed to boost your immune system, to build it up with the supplements it needs in a simple, easy-to-use, travel-ready gel pack. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud or use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. Again, try any of their products or just try the Immune Super Boost and get 20% off by using the code OUTLOUD at checkout.
I'm excited to talk about a new product from Healthy Cell, AC11. This is a patented bioactive extract of Uncaria tomentosa from the Amazon rainforest. It supports cell DNA repair and health span. It's a dietary supplement. I'm excited to try it. Many are interested in longevity and attenuation of senescence. We know that telomere length and other biologic measures are related to senescence in clinical and preclinical studies, particularly of animal models. And I can tell you, as a doctor, dietary supplements do hold the promise of attenuating repair and damage in our body due to stress, physical wear and tear, sunlight, etc. And there's a tremendous opportunity for supplements to help us in this area. And so Healthy Cell has brought a product to market for you to try as part of your health portfolio. So please go to healthycell.com and in the promotional code, list out loud for 20% off your first purchase of products from Healthy Cell. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutloud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Glad you could be here. We spent the first half talking about schools, the government schools, and, you know, reasons why a lot of people are not trusting. I'm seeing interesting statistics about homeschooling growing as parents start seeing what was actually being taught to their children. You know, maybe it's the silver lining of COVID that, you know, for the first time, we had more and more parents paying attention to what their children were being taught. It was not simply sending them off to school. You know, it was happening in the home. Parents got to see it and started saying, you know what? Maybe this ain't such a cool thing. But I want to kind of switch gears just a little bit. I saw an article out of the Epoch Times. And it's one of those things that the title maybe, I don't know if I'd say if it's misleading, but the title doesn't really give the whole thing. The headline is, January 6th defendants taken out of cells on stretchers, according to a court filing. Now, it was the story of what happened inside that I found interesting. See, apparently this all started when several of the January 6th defendants, now these are the people that are being held, many of them in solitary confinement with inadequate food, with inadequate medical care, with inadequate access to legal counsel. These basically are most of them political prisoners. Apparently, one of the defendants, Kelly Meggs, refused to wear a mask. See, understand now, just because you're a prisoner doesn't mean, I mean, she hasn't been found guilty yet. She's awaiting trial. She hasn't given up her rights. And apparently they, you know, these ridiculous DC rules about masks, and she refused it. So, well, the guard's reaction was to hit her with a chemical spray. Mace, pepper spray, something like that. At least this is according to a filing with the District Court for the District of Columbia. Now, in the filing, and I'm reading from the filing, Ms. Kelly refused to wear a mask. This caused a disturbance. The jail went into lockdown. And then, quoting from the complaint, they sprayed mace or some type of gas at an inmate and kept missing, so it went into the intake that fed into other cells, and the lady with the key left because she didn't like the gas. So the inmates in the cells are being fed the gas from the intake, were locked in for like 15 minutes while it was going into their rooms, and they couldn't see or breathe. Now, there's already been enough reporting about the maltreatment of these prisoners. The details, there aren't a lot of details about the lockdown or why they used mace on that person, or whatever chemical spray they used. Right? Could be mace, could be pepper spray, could be any one of a dozen different things. Was that justified? That was question number one. But many of these patients had to be taken out in stretchers because they were exposed for an extended period of time to some sort of chemical agent. Now, since they've already been refused adequate medical care, there are reports of inadequate food, that they're being held in solitary confinement. Do you trust your government to follow the law? And what kind of oversight is there? Because remember, District of Columbia is a federal city. They are legislated by Congress. They're not a state. But isn't it about time that there be some more investigation into the D.C. Department of Corrections and their jail system? It certainly seems to be that things aren't very kosher in our nation's capital. Speaking of that, Judicial Watch says it has evidence from the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department that shows that the shooting of Ashley Babbitt on January 6th was unjustified. Now, according to a Judicial Watch statement, they received video and audio and photographic evidence. They have a video that was apparently edited by the D.C. police that shows the aftermath of the shooting. They have photos showing where Babbitt died. And apparently, Babbitt was crawling in through a broken window into the, into the speaker's lobby, which is adjacent to the House chambers. Now, the officer who shot Ms. Babbitt, who killed Ms. Babbitt, and Officer Byrd, said he had issued verbal warnings before opening fire and admitted that he did not know that Babbitt was unarmed. He says that she was, quote, she was posing a threat to the United States House of Representatives. At least he said that on an embassy interview back in August. Now, Byrd said he couldn't fully see her hands. He didn't know what was in the backpack. He didn't know what her intentions were. But they had shown violence leading up to that point. Again, I haven't seen any evidence of violence. A little bit of rowdiness, but I wouldn't say violence. However, according to a Judicial Watch records release back in October, they released records from D.C. police showing that multiple officers claimed they did not see a weapon in Babbitt's hands. Did not, at least before she was shot. And one officer attested that he didn't hear any verbal commands before Byrd fired at Babbitt. So this does appear to be at least questionable. There at least seems to be enough to, if not warrant an investigation, if not an actual indictment and prosecution. However, Byrd was cleared back in April by both the Department of Justice and the D.C. police, the Capitol Police, through what they call a thorough investigation. I'm sorry, isn't that like the fox guarding the hen house? Doesn't it sound an awful lot like one of the reasons we declared independence? You know, in the grievances list in the Declaration of Independence, one was for protecting soldiers by mock trial from punishment for any murder which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. Doesn't it sound a little bit like that? Now, again, Mr. Byrd deserves his day in court. But just like anybody else, he needs to show he had good cause to use lethal force to stop an intruder. If there was no weapon, if he did not issue verbal orders that she ignored, then that was not a good shoot. And the simple fact that the GOJ cleared her should she cleared him, should be immaterial. Why? You know, we get bent out of shape when police departments investigate their own and come to a conclusion. Why not when it's the federal police? Capitol Police are a federal officer. Again, I don't know. The evidence certainly doesn't look good for Officer Byrd, but he does deserve his day in court. And so does the family of Ashley Babbitt. If she committed, you know, if what she did was a lethal threat, well, then Mr. Byrd should be cleared. However, if her actions maybe were wrong, but not a lethal threat, well, then not only should Byrd be punished for that, but the agency he works for should be responsible for those actions. But between the actions of the D.C. Department of Corrections, the U.S. Capitol Police, the Department of Justice, do you trust your government? I don't trust them. I really don't. And they've given me lots of reasons why. It's one of the reasons why when the FBI came to serve me a warrant, I didn't get chatty with them. I'm sorry, but I don't trust them. I don't think individually the vast majority of them are bad people. It's not that I didn't trust the individual. It's the system. And that's a sad place to be. Now, another example has to be what's been going on with James O'Keefe and Project Veritas. You know, to raid journalists' apartments for information is dubious at best. And when we talk about freedom of the press, we're not simply talking about the media. We're talking about your ability to publish. And if your ability to publish can be trampled upon by government actors, well then, do you have that freedom? Is that not an infringement? Now, that doesn't mean that just because you publish something, you go away scot-free. You can do whatever you want without consequence. But what I'm seeing going on with Project Veritas seems much more the political hit job than an investigation into actual criminality. And I'm not the only one. I'm sure I'm not the only one. But I found out that Senator Cotton has sent a letter to Attorney General Garland raising concerns about the FBI raids on New York locations tied to Project Veritas, including the apartment of founder James O'Keefe. Now, according to the New York Times, the raids were related to an investigation into the theft of the diary of Ashley Biden. Yeah, President Biden's daughter. Now, Senator Cotton claims that the search warrants, the execution of these search warrants, were not standard investigatory practices of the FBI, which brings into question the motivation of those investigations. Furthermore, it appears that information was leaked to the New York Times of data collected during these, quote-unquote, execution of these search warrants. He also wants to know, did the White House have any advance notice of the warrants? Now, what I find interesting is this, again, all seems to be rolling around this Ashley Biden diary. Now, apparently her diary was, well, some people say stolen. Some people say left behind. She left it behind. Some people say... From what I've found out so far, James O'Keefe claims that he was given a copy of the data from the diary and... He did his due diligence, and he could not find sufficient evidence to prove that this wasn't stolen. So he did not publish it. In other words, he acted like a journalist, which makes you wonder, if he didn't publish this data, why is he being investigated for this data? Unless they believe he stole it, or someone at Project Veritas stole it? So we have several concerns. Is this another example of the FBI and the DOJ being weaponized by another administration to go after their political enemies? Because let's face it, Project Veritas has gathered some very interesting investigative reporting that doesn't shine a very flattering light, shall we say, on many of the those who are supporters of the Democratic Party. So there certainly is the possibility of a conflict of interest, especially when you see that data that was collected during the execution of a search warrant was quickly available to the New York Times, which is certainly a competitor to Project Veritas. Makes people wonder. Now, I got a couple other things I want to talk about. Let's focus on the federal government here, but this actually comes from what's called the Aspen Institute. Just another think tank. Now, this is described as a left-leaning think tank. Okay. I'm trying to avoid these labels because they mean different things to different people, and they tend to do more than to confuse things and to clarify things. But the Institute's Commission on Information Disorder released a report the other day detailing what they refer to as several approaches on how to best combat misinformation and disinformation online and in the media. Now, let's admit, I will admit there is a huge amount of misinformation and disinformation both online and in the media. And I tell you, what do we do about it? Whether it's the news media I've talked about, whether it's some person online making statements, what is the proper response to this? Well, apparently, according to the Aspen Institute, the proper response is to silence those who disagree with them. Yeah, they want moderation practices targeted at individuals or accounts deemed to be super spreaders of misinformation. But you see, someone needs to point out that who is defining what is misinformation? See, what someone says is misinformation, I refer to as the CDC website. In other words, someone tells me that vaccines are safe and effective, but when I go to the CDC website and I go to other peer-reviewed journals and I see that the vaccine does cause medical problems, that means it's not safe, at least not necessarily, that the vaccine, by their own admission, does not stop the transmission of COVID-19, therefore it's not effective. So if I say that it's neither safe nor effective, I'm labeled as providing misinformation. But you see, my information is based on facts and data. On the other hand, we have another group, and the only reason I identified them, that they're identified as a left-leaning group, is because while I say a pox on both their houses, there's only one group, there's only one side to this argument that doesn't want the other side to be heard. And that is the leftists, the progressive, the totalitarians. Those words are now synonymous. I'm sorry. If you're a leftist, you're a progressive, you are a totalitarian. You wish to control the flow of information. You do not believe in free speech. You do not believe in freedom of the press. Why? Because you wish to suppress information you disagree with. You see, when I find somebody that says something I think is absolutely asinine, absolutely stupid, be my guest. When I see people put out misinformation, I say, give me more. Show to the world just how foolish you are. You tell me that the masks work, but then you tell me the masks don't work. I don't mean you tell me that they don't work. You show me that they don't work because you got to use two masks. You tell me that masks are important, but you don't act that way. You tell me that the vaccine works, but that people still need to wear a mask. You see, it's one of those, better to keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and prove it. I don't want to interrupt these people. That's the difference. Those who wish to silence opposition, those who wish to expose opposition. If you wish to silence opposition, you are a totalitarian, you are a tyrant, you are antithetical to freedom and liberty. If you wish to expose misinformation, expose those who disagree with you, will you at least allow them the right to say what they want, to publish what they want, the freedom and liberty to be different? Now, sadly, I've kind of posed this as a left-right, but this isn't truly a left-right because there are plenty of instances when the right is just as guilty as the left of infringing on the free speech rights of others. You see, there are those on the right that don't want the opposition, the ability to have the ability to only post information they want. See, there are those. I was at one of the meetings last week and had a very involved discussion with someone who wants to impose on business owners their point of view. Now, I tend to agree with their point of view. I agree that it is wrong for an establishment to not serve someone because of the color of their skin or their sexual preference or their vaccination status. But you see, there's a difference between thinking it is wrong and saying I have the right to impose my will on others. So while those on the progressive side, the leftist side, the shut everybody who disagrees with us up side, they seem to spend most of their time infringing on the rights of others. They aren't the exclusive exercises of that. There are plenty of examples of those that we would call on the right, that we would call conservative, that are just as guilty of suppressing information they don't like. They just do it differently. But both sides like to use large corporations and government to impose their will on others. They couch it in safety, they couch it in necessity, but what they're doing is imposing their will on others. Now, before I go, I have one other news article I want to hit. It's another example of imposing your will on others. Governor Newsom has extended the California state of emergency for the third time. Now understand, all the evidence shows this is not a medical emergency. COVID-19 is not that deadly. It is relatively easily treatable for the vast majority of Americans. But it's been used as a political emergency. And what happens? So you take somebody and you hand them power, they don't want to let go. The vast majority of the emergency that currently exists in California is the creation of Californians and the government they elected in Sacramento. The vast majority of the emergency situations in California right now are of Governor Newsom's own making. And when the people of California had the opportunity to remove Governor Newsom and replace him with somebody else, they chose, nope, we want to be ruled by a tyrant. We want a dictator to simply call everything an emergency and we'll tell you what to do and you're stuck with us. That's what California wants. Guess what? That's why I don't live in California. See, here's the interesting thing. I think what California is doing is stupid. And I think in some cases it is even criminal at a federal level. But for the most part, if Californians wish to be subjects to the government in Sacramento, well, you see, that's their right. And if a majority of the citizens of California do not wish to be free, but wish to live as subjects of a dictatorial government where their governor simply says, hey, we have an emergency, which means I get more powers and I'll just keep extending it as long as I can. Well, they gave that power. They had the chance to stop Governor Newsom. They decided not to. So if they want to do that, be my guest. Just one important little thing. Don't expect me to bail you out when this all comes crashing down. See, that's the problem. When California is crumbling, they go begging to the federal government for money to protect them from their bad decisions. It's like giving a heroin addict another shot. It's like giving a drunk a fifth of Jack. If these states wish to experiment with these policies, well, as long as they only, as they don't infringe on the rights of their citizens, be my guest, just leave the rest of us alone. And every time they go begging to the federal government, your representatives in Congress has offered to bail them out. You know, when I was a kid, there was a thing called tough love. When a parent would stand up and allow a child to suffer the consequences of their bad actions so they would learn there are consequences. Well, as long as we keep protecting the people of California from the consequences of their bad decisions, they will continue to make bad decisions. It is time for California to stand as California. You're still part of the union, which means you're still responsible to the Constitution of the United States. I'm not saying we kick them out. But guess what? It's not our responsibility to bail you out from your bad decisions. Ladies and gentlemen, California, it's time for you to suffer the consequences of bad decisions and learn from that. And until you do, you will continue to vote for tyranny and hypocrisy and then wonder why the rest of the country thinks you're crazy. So please be sure to make AmericaOutLoud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. Do your part. Share the stories, the articles, the podcast, the video. Help secure the blessings of liberty to yourself and to America's future.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.